From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lillard.
Good morning and welcome to Veterans Radio. Good morning to all of our active duty military spread out around the world, that thin green and blue line that protects us and protects other countries as well. Us older vets really admire the job you're doing and how good you are at what you do. Good morning to my veteran brothers and sisters, and welcome home. And good morning to all the folks down under on both the Australian and the South American continents. Appreciate your listening in and appreciate the emails that we receive from you. And that includes Tasmania and New Zealand. My name is Gary Lilly, CB, MCB3, Chu Lai, Republic of Vietnam, 1966. I'm your host today, and in the control room is the kid, Andy Penny. Good morning, Andy.
Hey, how's it going, Gary? How you doing?
Real good. Glad to see you over there. Andy Penny has been with us for several weeks and learning the control room and the controls. He's all on his own this week, doing a great job from what I see so far. Andy, your dad was a Vietnam vet, or is a Vietnam vet.
Yep. He shot 155 howitzers, or 155 howitzers, and his duty was from, I believe, 1970 to 71.
Is he proud of his service?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
One of the things that people just don't seem to realize is how fiercely proud Vietnam veterans are of their service and how fiercely they love our country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I grew up, you know, learning all about it from him, and it was interesting from the stories that he would tell me. So.
Right. Yeah. Probably closed mouth about most of it, right?
Yeah, you know, when you get a little older, he tells you a little bit more.
Yeah. So, that's good. You know, you Vietnam vets out there, you need to tell your families about your service. And if it's painful, it's painful, but let them know what you did. We did a show called Shaky's Hill some time back. And with that, it was a documentary done by an Australian combat photographer. He was a movie cameraman. He was in Cambodia with the 7th Cav, and then he was so impressed by the guys that he served with or he was with, and was so upset with the image that was portrayed in this country, he organized a reunion, and he found all the guys that he could from that unit, had a reunion, showed old footage and interviews that they did back then in country, and interviews today in a juxtaposition of. And the documentary was the most powerful one I've ever seen. The footage was astounding for any of you grunts that were out there in the jungles fighting in anything that you did. I really encourage you to go to the website, shakyshill.com, buy a copy of that documentary, Shaky's Hill, hand it to your loved ones, and let them find out. Let them see what you did. You don't have to tell them. They'll see it. It's just so stunning.
Yeah, I actually came across a bag of 8mm film that has some stuff from Vietnam on it, and I've been meaning to put it onto a DVD for my dad, but just haven't got around to it. You know, being a poor college student and everything, time's precious, but I will, Dad, if you're listening, I will do that for you, I promise, sometime here.
I want to do that with some of mine, too. I got them put on the tape. On a VCR tape. Now that's deteriorating, and I want to get them on a DVD. And I have some of my old, we used to send back audio tapes back and forth to the families.
Right.
I've got a bag full of those, and I'd love to be able to figure out how to get them off of a reel-to-reel tape recorder and onto a CD.
Yeah, that's the big issue there is how do you go from reel-to-reel to DVD?
One of the guys in my unit, Phil Weatherwax, he's asked a number of times, do you remember when they overran a little village near his hamlet, Sam High, I think it was the name of it. No, I don't remember that. Well, I found one of the old audio tapes and was listening to it. Very poor quality because it was the humidity had it almost sealed shut.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so we were turning it with a pencil, trying to approximate the speed of the tape recorder. And so sometimes it's real low like this, and sometimes it goes up like this. But it was while we were recording it, they were overrunning Sam High, and I heard I remember I said at one point, wow, the guys on the wire are pretty nervous tonight. There's a lot of shooting going on down there. Little did I know that Sam High was getting hit by the VC about a quarter of a mile away. Before I forget, I know I'll forget to mention it later on. Next week, we have a guest I'm looking forward to it so much. Bob Feller, Hall of Fame pitcher, who served in the U.S. Navy in World War II, and I understand from talking to the guy who's the curator of the Bob Feller Museum, Bob Feller is more proud of his military career than he is of his baseball career. And when people ask him what his greatest win was, he says World War II. And another thing, he's extremely patriotic. When he's signing autographs for kids, before he signs the autograph, he says to the kids, tell me the first three words of the United States Constitution. That's something special. I'm looking forward to talking to him. I remember him pitching. Didn't care for him much back then when he was beating the Detroit Tigers, but I've forgiven him now. We're in tough economic times. And I'd like to mention to all of the vets, all the active duty troops out there, there's a lot of help available to you. The University of Detroit Mercy Law School, as an example, has a mobile law office, which they go city to city and ask for vets to come up and tell them what their issues are so they can help them with them, whether it's foreclosure, whether it's whatever. We'll try to get that up on our website. They were going to be on the air with us this morning, and at the last minute, they found out the person who was going to do the interview couldn't make it, so we're just mentioning it right now. Hopefully, University of Detroit Mercy Law School has a website. You can go on there, find out about it. And also, companies like Conway Freight, based here in Ann Arbor, but they have 28,000 workers nationwide, 28,000 employees. They have a contract with the United States Army Reserves to hire mechanics, drivers, or whatever, to hire reserves, active duty, at Conway Freight. And I'm assuming the same goes for veterans. So check out Conway Freight. I know they've got a website. I've been on it. And if you can't find any one of those, you can find a local Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, a VFW, an American Legion. Quite often, they'll know where you can go for help for your particular problem. It's tough economic times. And on the subject, Veterans Radio could use some support on sponsors and advertisers. Doesn't matter what, we're not a nonprofit, so you don't get a tax write-off, but we are a nonprofit. We pay for a lot of this out of our own pocket to keep Veterans Radio going. If you'd like to be a sponsor of Veterans Radio, go to our website, go to sponsors. The website is veteransradio.net, and the click on sponsors. There's a place where to send an email, where to send a donation, and you can be a sponsor of Veterans Radio. Each week, where's my script here? We're going to do some welcome homes right now. And all of my organization is for naught because I buried my script. Here we go. Had it in my hand. Too many notes on it to recognize what it was. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of our country. We want to hear about your troops coming home. Go to veteransradio.net, send us an email of any individual troop or unit. Dateline, Onincock, Virginia. Well-wishers gathered at the flag festoon Onincock Armory to welcome home soldiers from the Virginia Army National Guard's Detachment 2 of the 1173 Transportation Company. The soldiers spent the last year deployed in Iraq, where they drove tractor trailers loaded with supplies for U.S. Army troops. The overseas tour of duty, the first in years for the unit, was its longest. And that, you know, that is PTSD on the hoof right there. Those people driving the trucks, they are constantly under tension, under pressure. So welcome home, you troops from the Virginia Army National Guard's Detachment 2. Dateline Raleigh, North Carolina. The North Carolina National Guard has scheduled a welcome home ceremony for a small detachment that has spent a year in Afghanistan. The Guard said the ceremony will be held at the Military Center in Raleigh for the 7-member 382nd Public Affairs Detachment. The unit was attached to the 101st Airborne Division. If Bob Gould was here at this point, he would say, hoorah! Headquarters in Bagram, Members of the detachment produced stories and photographs for the Army and ran the Media Operations Center in Bagram. During their deployment, the soldiers embedded more than 300 journalists with coalition units and initiated an outreach program to local Afghan media organizations. Dateline, Chicopee, Massachusetts. Staff Sergeant Corey M. Bissonette came home after 5 months in Iraq. Surreal is the way he described it, but he would not trade that feeling for the world. "He just feels so happy to be home in the United States," said Bissonette of Tolland, Connecticut. He was one of about 10 airmen and women from the 439th Services Squadron at Westover Air Reserve Base who returned home following a deployment at the Joint Base Balad in Iraq. The reservists were in charge of lodging, physical fitness training, and food for 30,000 servicemen and women. Dateline Newport News, Virginia. Welcome home celebrations await a Virginia-based military police unit due back to the States after a 12-month deployment in Iraq. 50 soldiers with the 202nd Military Police Company are to be welcomed home at Fort Eustis, with a second ceremony planned when 110 additional soldiers return. During its deployment, the 202nd conducted route security, maintained a police transition team, and trained Iraqi police. That route security is a really tough job, keeping the IEDs and the ambushes away from our convoys. Welcome Home is sponsored by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. Visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. That's 239-280-2552. Welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
An investor recently said, "This is the best real estate market I've ever seen." At Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, we've seen tough markets in the past and know you can benefit from them. We don't see tough, we see opportunity. We know the quickest way for buyers to achieve wealth is created in a buyer's market, and this is the best market we've seen for buyers in decades. We'll help you select, analyze, finance solid real estate investments. That's why Sperry Van Ness brokers are known as real estate advisors. Call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates for a professional discussion about your investment goals. We'll locate properties we believe best fit you, then you decide if you agree. Call 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Visit our website, svnlillie.com. Veterans Radio is pleased to welcome retired Rear Admiral Benjamin Montoya. Admiral Montoya is a 1958 graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He served two tours in Vietnam with Mobile Construction Battalion 3, better than best, my old unit, in 1965 and 66. He retired from the Navy after 30 years as a Rear Admiral and Chief of the Navy Civil Engineers Corps. Admiral Montoya is currently chair of the CECCB Historical Foundation and is involved in the building of a new CB museum at the Construction Battalion Center at Port Hueneme, California. Admiral Montoya, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Gary.
Good to be with you, sir, as I used to say in the old days. You graduated from the Naval Academy. What kind of a education you get in the Naval Academy? Civilians don't quite understand that.
Gary, in those days, all of us got the same education, unlike today where they have various majors. We all graduated with undergraduate degrees in general engineering. We all were expected to be seagoing naval officers, and so we had seamanship, navigation, electrical engineering, lots of studies in power plants, mechanical engineering, navigation, and then the usual, lots of mathematics, English, history, and those kinds of things. So we had a general degree in engineering.
That education is sort of not the way it's portrayed by Hollywood. You guys are
not quite.
And that's just the beginning of your education, is it not? Once you get in the military, you go on to really specialized schools.
Well, as a matter of fact, because of my bad vision, I could not go in the regular Navy. I went in the Civil Engineer Corps, inspired by John Wayne and the Fighting Seabees movie.
Oh, gosh, you too.
Me too, and I ended up going to Rensselaer Polytechnic in New York for a bachelor's in civil engineering, and then later a master's degree in civil engineering from Georgia Tech, all on Navy time. So you're absolutely right. The Navy offered great continuing education opportunities.
I think they still do, all service.
And they still do. You're right.
For the general public, what is the equivalent general rank in the Army for a rear admiral?
Well, for a two-star, as I was when I graduated, it would be an Army Major General.
Okay. Now all the Army and Air Force guys can follow what you are, what you did. Okay. Meet any interesting people at the Navy Academy?
Well, I did. One of the most interesting one was a good friend of mine and a classmate, a gentleman named John McCain.
I think most of us have heard of him.
I think you've heard of Johnny McCain. I also went to school with a fellow named Bruce McCandless, who is an astronaut who put the Hubble Space Telescope in space. Another gentleman named Johnny Poindexter, who was famous during Iran-Contra. John was a four-star admiral that headed up Reagan's National Security Council. And there were various other classmates who went on to do very fine things. But really, the most interesting people I've met have been later on in my life on this project that we'll talk about in a few minutes, World War II Seabees. Wonderful men, and some of them very successful.
They set a standard that we had to live up to. And it was a tough standard. Give us about a couple-minute recap of what your military career was. Was Vietnam your very first assignment?
After my engineering degrees, I was involved with a major construction project at the Naval Shipyard at Long Beach. The yard was sinking because of the pumping of oil, and we had to raise the entire waterfront, the piers, and build dikes around the shipyard. That was my first real engineering construction job. Then I went to Port Hueneme, California, the Seabee base, and was a public works officer there on the base. And then from there, I transferred to MCB-3 in 1965. I went to Guam. Things were very peaceful when we went to Guam. But instead of coming home in the spring of 65, we went to Vietnam with the Marine Corps. In March, I went with the advance party, and by June, the entire battalion was in Da Nang, Vietnam, building their early camps for the Marine Corps. Then you joined us later after we came back home, and we went back in 66 to a beautiful location named Rosemary Point in Chulai, sort of in north-central Vietnam. And after the Seabees, Gary, I went on to graduate school, more public works duty. But then I got involved in the Navy's environmental programs, which were brand new in 1970. And for the next 11 years, I was involved in the field, at our headquarters in Washington, in the Pentagon, developing the Navy's worldwide environmental programs, both shipborne programs and ashore, to clean up and catch up with 200 years of really not paying much attention to the environment. And during that period of time, I became a lawyer because engineering and law and doing environmental work all tied in together. And so I finished my career as a lawyer, but then became the West Coast engineer, and from there back to the Pentagon as a one-star admiral, and then was selected as chief of the Civil Engineer Corps and the commander of the Facilities Engineering Command, and I did that for almost 3 years. And then I retired for the first time. It was a career of 30 years that went so fast and was so interesting that I'm not sure I ever worked. It was so much fun.
Well, I can guarantee you some of us worked.
DBs work all the time. when you're watching them real close.
You gave me the lead on how to find our old battalion commander, Commander Foley.
Commander Dick Foley, yes,
yep.
Wonderful man.
Oh, and I sent him a letter and thanked him for the leadership, and I got a phone call from him, because I put a funny story in there that that happened while we were there, and he called back, called me about a week later. He said he was still laughing about it. He read the letter to all of his family and friends. He told me that the MCB-3 in 1966, adjusted for inflation, was the first CB battalion to place $1 million worth of materials on the ground, and did it again in 67, and it has not been done before or since. So I knew that they got their money's worth out of us, and I was really pleased to hear that we did set some sort of a record.
We did. At the time, we won the best of type, as you recall, in
yes.
1966. Because of that, I can't remember any CB, including the, we called them, you know, the seagoing sailors who were with the battalion. Remember when we had to lay the runway out there in July, and we had everybody in the battalion working, laying that AM2 matting, including the cooks and the...
Yep, quite well. That was 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. shift.
I mean, we had all hands turned out, and it all counted. It all counted toward the labor we put in, and so truly everybody was a CB on that tour.
They were. They truly were. I remember, as you said, we had cooks on that triple box culvert job with us, and I watched a construction, civilian construction company a few years ago do almost the identical job, and it was snowing at the end of winter when they started, and it was snowing at the beginning of the next winter when they finished, and we did it, and that triple box culvert, I believe it was 13 days.
Oh, it was a 24/7 job. You guys did a great job. Matter of fact, I've got my cruise book open, and I've got your picture in front of me right now, but the nice pictures in Delta Company was of that box culvert. There's a whole page of really wonderful pictures as that thing was built.
It's one of the jobs that I'm most proud of over there. And so the work the guys did, I was definitely not the best worker. I worked hard, but I was not the best. I was surrounded by guys that, boy, you had to try to keep up with them, and they were awesome. Do you know who else was nearby towards the end of our deployment there, just a couple hundred yards away over on the area called the Sand Ramp where the LSTs offloaded?
Yes.
You do know that. Roger Staubach.
Well, I know. I know it quite well. In fact, I've told that story. Roger used to come over and drink Cokes at our old club, and then he used to work out, run around the beach with the Seabees. But the other fellow that was with Roger, his public works officer, was a Lieutenant Kent Riffey, Civil Engineer Corps, Lieutenant Riffey. Roger was a senior supply corps guy. He was an ensign. And later on, Kent Riffey became Admiral Riffey and was my deputy commander when I was chief of engineers.
Nice.
So we were in July together as young naval officers, obviously having no idea what the future held for us. But no, I knew Roger and have seen him since. But no, he was there. That was his first tour of duty after supply school.
Have you been back to Vietnam?
I have not.
I went back last March. It was almost exactly a year ago. Went back to the Chu Lai area, back to a place called Hill 35.
Yeah.
You would not. The Chu Lai airstrip we built was used as a military base by the Vietnamese Army or Air Force, and it's now become an international terminal, and they're building a 5,600 hectare, which is, I think there's 2 point some acres per hectare or 4 acres. It's a huge industrial area around the Chulai airstrip, and on the south end of the airstrip, they have master planned a city of 230,000 they're going to build from scratch to house the workers that are going to be in the industrial area based at the Chulai airstrip that we built.
I'll be darned.
And
I'll be
there's
darned.
A new highway called the Trans-Asian Highway that's going to be anchored at the airstrip. Stunning.
Well, I have Googled Rosemary Point on Google Earth, and I see the outlines of some of the roads we built. And I think some of the buildings were that you guys built for Roger Staubach, those two-story admin buildings, they appear to be still there.
I got within a few hundred yards of Rosemary Point, and I took a young couple with me. It was my wedding gift to them. I said, your wedding gift includes me. And we went to Vietnam, and I took them to a place called Hill 35 that shaped my later life. And I was hoping we'd be able to get back to the hill. It was there was a sand two-track road going back to it. Well, that sand two-track road is now as straight as an arrow, blacktop road in an industrial park, and where there once was a ridgeline on the right-hand side where it took sniper fire and they launched a couple of attacks and ambushes from. That was bulldozed out into the rice paddies, but there's the same skyline, but now it's industrial buildings.
Oh, wow.
It's really worth it going back. I tried to get a hold of Roger Staubach because he's created a very, very successful commercial real estate firm specializing in industrial. One of the competitors is over there, and I thought, hey, Staubach Commercial ought to be over there because that was his home ground for him.
That's right.
And there's a huge amount of construction going on around Chulai. Rosemary Point's not been touched yet, but soon it will be. Oh, that covers your career. A belated happy birthday to all CBs.
Absolutely, absolutely. That was a couple of days ago, and you know, we're hoping that 2 years from now we'll be opening our museum on Saturday, March 5th, on the day of the birthday. So this is a great time of the year. I'll be going to two CB balls, one at Port Hueneme next Saturday night, and then the following week I'll be back in Washington for the annual Washington, D.C. CB Ball. Always great to go back and see old friends. And these days, the young ensigns that were working for me when I retired are now admirals. So it's really fun to see these young people grow up and now in charge of the Corps and the CBs.
You realize how old you're getting, but there's a huge amount of pride in seeing people that you mentored.
Well, it really is. It really is. They're all so gracious. Every time we meet, and but you were speaking earlier, you can't replace the bonds that you make, and anybody who served with you, even if you didn't know them at the time, the fact somebody says MCB3, to me that's enough. They're friends,
right?
Immediately.
We have a reunion every year. I've been able to make all but about three of them, and you were at the last one that I attended, and I was really pleased to see you there because the officers don't show up very often.
And we're working on getting more of them there when we meet in Kansas City in 2 years. I've got a list of many of the officers and addresses, and I'm going to write them personal letters.
Great. We're talking to retired Rear Admiral Benjamin Montoya, who is the retired as a Rear Admiral and Chief of the Navy Civil Engineers Corps. You're listening to us on Veterans Radio, coming to you on Ave Maria Radio. We'll be going to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your project, the museum, and people you met along the way. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Harold Aggerholm evacuated 45 casualties in 3 hours under heavy fire. Details after this.
If you're a recent Air Force veteran, you probably spend some time comparing your new civilian life with what you had on the Air Force. Maybe the grass isn't as green as you thought it would be. Well, you might have a chance to come back. We're looking for people in certain career fields to return to active duty. Maybe your job's on the list. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
When the enemy launched a fierce, determined counterattack against our positions and overran a neighboring artillery battalion on Saipan, Aggerholm immediately volunteered to assist in the efforts to check the hostile attack and evacuate our wounded. Locating and appropriating an abandoned ambulance jeep, he repeatedly made extremely perilous trips under heavy rifle and mortar fire and single-handedly loaded and evacuated approximately 45 casualties, working tirelessly and with utter disregard for his own safety during a grueling period of more than 3 hours. Despite intense, persistent enemy fire, he ran out to aid two men whom he believed to be wounded Marines, but was himself mortally wounded by a Japanese sniper while carrying out his hazardous mission. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
We're back on Veterans Radio. We're speaking with retired Rear Admiral Benjamin Montoya, currently chair of the CEC, Civil Engineering Corps, CB Historical Foundation, and in charge of fundraising. Before we get into that, you were also named by President Clinton to the Base Closure Commission, and that was had to be a tough job because I believe the Navy was cut and the rest of the military absolutely cut in half. The CB battalions came through unscathed in that, but you had politics, economics, and tradition to deal with. How tough was that job?
As a military person, then later I did that job when I was a civilian. I was the head of the Public Service Company of New Mexico, the major utility in that state. When I was appointed to that commission, I was basically the Navy representative on that base closure commission. By that I mean having Navy background. There was an Air Force four-star general on that commission who was a classmate of mine at the Naval Academy. And then the Army major general that was on that commission is now the head of USAA, which is, another very nice coincidence. But it was very difficult because we visited many bases around the country and who were on the base closure list, and it was so difficult because the families that lived and worked in those bases went all out to try to save their base, and for being a Vietnam War veteran, and you recall, Gary, we didn't receive the warmest welcome from many of our civilian friends here in this country. Well, it felt so good to travel around the bases in 1995 and to see at that time the love for the military expressed by the various communities, not just the families, but the community leaders, the business leaders. They went all out to try to save their bases. So when the decisions came down to close this base versus that base, and we had to take into account whether we had duplicate bases, what impact closing the base would have on the small communities. For example, we didn't close the base at Del Rio, Texas, because that Air Force training base, to have closed that, it would have ruined that town. So we closed an Air Force training base at Lubbock, Texas, which is a much bigger community, had a major university, had a major airport, and they were more able to absorb the loss of a training base than, say, Del Rio, Texas, right on the border. So those kinds of decisions had to be made, and they were not easy. Fortunately, at the time, we had the two CB bases at Gulfport, Port Hueneme. We had the four battalions in each place. And the CBs, even then, were so active and had been very active in the Gulf War that they were not on anyone's sight to close because we're not very big but have tremendous impact when called upon. And everyone appreciated that. So So I felt very good about the fact we did not have to visit CB bases to close them.
The in Vietnam, I think that there were never any more than 10,000 CBs in all of the battalions at any time during the Vietnam War. I told a friend, I gave him the list of the things that we had built, and he said, is that what the CBs built in Vietnam? And I said, no, that's what my battalion built in the deployment I was on. He says, God, no wonder you were tired when you came back.
Tired and thin.
Oh, yes. You're in charge of the CB Historical. You're the chair of the CB Historical Foundation, CEC, CB Historical Foundation, and in charge of fundraising. What's going on with that? Could you fill us in on this new museum?
I'd be delighted to. We have a very, very old museum that started just after World War II. You know, CBs are great pack rats, and they've been bringing back stuff from their deployments for years. And the museum was started unofficially in some large elephant huts, which are large versions of the standard Quonset hut. And it's these buildings are World War II vintage. They're not air-conditioned. They're not heated. So you freeze in the winter, and it's hot and humid in the summer. And our exhibits have been deteriorating over time. And, yeah, we have a wonderful collection of the history of the CBs and the Civil Engineer Corps. And so our board in the early 90s organized itself and launched a campaign early 2000, and we launched a campaign on the Forbes family yacht. It just so happens one of our trustees, a fellow named Wally Forbes, was a Civil Engineer Corps officer, was a charter member of three battalions, including MCB3. He was at QB Point during that great construction period, and we had a wonderful cruise on the family yacht, the Highlander, the Friday night before 9/11 to kick off the campaign. Well, you know what happened to charitable donations after 9/11.
Yes.
It dried up, and all the money went to New York for the next couple of years. So we had to kick off the campaign again a couple of years later. And so we've been at it since early 2000 in a serious fashion. We've raised $13 million. We've handed the Navy a check about a year ago for $10 million. And we're about to award, as we speak, that it may have been signed yesterday, but any day now we're going to have an award to start constructing the building, 35,000 square foot building, just outside the new gate at Port Hueneme, California. And that's important because when we build this new museum, the public at large can have easy access. They don't have to go through a gate guard to see the museum, and so we hope to be able to tell the story of the CBs like it's never been told. To a wider public because they can have access, because that story of the CBs is not only worth telling, but it continues to unfold as we speak. CBs continue to deploy around the world, have been very much involved in the Middle East over the past few years, but still doing humanitarian things in South America and Africa and other places. So it's been a very, very rewarding project. Glad to announce that we are underway, about to get underway with the construction of it. But you know, the most important aspect for me personally has been meeting so many of our donors, especially the 80-plus-year-old CBs from World War II, three of which have been very prominent donors and supporters.
What kind of story? Give us one story that sticks in your mind so much that you've heard from the World War II guys.
Well, there are a couple of guys. They're so CB-like, it's unbelievable. One fellow named Jerry Halpin was out in the Pacific, and after the war, he saved all his money. He would save his poker winnings, and he would save his paychecks because he had one goal in mind, was to go to college. And he and another CB came back and on the GI Bill enrolled into an Ivy League school. Didn't like the tuition, so they gathered their money and got some friends to invest with them, and they bought a fixer-upper house out in town and put their CB skills to work and fixed this house, lived in it, and started renting out some of the other rooms. they found it so lucrative, they bought another one. And the next thing you know, they got into the development real estate business, got their degrees, and Jerry Halpin began to buy land in Washington, D.C. And those of you who know the D.C. area, he bought a tract of land, a very large tract of land, which included a farm owned by the Tyson family. And this area became known as Tyson's Corner. Jerry has been the major developer over the years of Tyson's Corner and obviously become very, very successful, not only wealth-wise, but as a community activist, both politically and involved with projects involving the National Park Service and so forth. We found him because he had working for him CEC officers, and one of them, Captain Bob Bell, told us, "You got to meet my boss. He is so proud of being a CB, he'll probably help you." And Jerry has helped us to the tune of $1.5 million, and I visit him and love to hear his wonderful stories of World War II and his can-do spirit. The other CB is a fellow named Don Bentley. He's living in Minden, Nevada, and he was so ambitious as a young 17-year-old. He was a math whiz, and he took correspondence courses in math and had college-level equivalents on his own during the fight of World War II. Came back, and he finished his degree at Berkeley, became an inventor, and he's invented some very sophisticated vibration sensing equipment that are used in rotary engines.
We're going to ask you to finish that up after this next break. We're coming up to the last break, remarkably.
Okay.
We're listening to Rear Admiral Benjamin Montoya, retired. We'll be back right after this break.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
An investor recently said, "This is the best real estate market I've ever seen." At Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, we've seen tough markets in the past and know you can benefit from them. We don't see tough, we see opportunity. We know the quickest way for buyers to achieve wealth is created in a buyer's market, and this is the best market we've seen for buyers in decades. We'll help you select, analyze, finance solid real estate investments. That's why Sperry Van Ness brokers are known as real estate advisors. Call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates for a professional discussion about your investment goals. We'll locate properties we believe best fit you, then you decide if you agree. Call 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Visit our website, svnlillie.com. And we're back on Veterans Radio talking to Rear Admiral Benjamin Montoya, retired, talking about the upcoming construction of the new CB Museum, Civil Engineer Corps CB Museum. And you finish up that story that you were telling us about the one fellow that you met, former CB, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that museum, okay?
Sure. Yeah. I want to finish with Don Bentley. He... Again, he's an entrepreneur, inventor. He's in his mid-80s. He still works. And now he's getting into biofuels because he thinks it's important that we get off of foreign oil. He's a most interesting man. And he has offered us $1 million matching gift. And so every dollar that we collect is matched by him. And he's gotten us now close to $14 million in donations. And we need about $6 million more to have the money we need to make sure that we can now do the interior of the exhibit, of the museum, with the exhibits and so forth, so that we tell the story properly with all the material that we've got. So we're still in the campaign, Gary. We're not through yet, but glad that we're going to start the building.
Well, let's tell people how they can donate so that we can get that full $1 million of matching funds.
That'd be great. Any CB listening or any military person who has had help from a CB or knows a CB are welcome to join us. We have a website. It's www.cb, H as in hotel, F as in foxtrot, .org. Go to that website and you get all the information you need about the foundation, about the museum. We not only are collecting dollars, but we also have a memorial brick program. We sold 4,000 bricks that are going to make up the walkway entrance to the museum. They're $125 a piece, and you can inscribe the name of a loved one, a friend, or your own name for that matter, to help contribute to the museum. We provide services regarding reunions. We can find old friends for you. But mainly we're there to tell the story of this great organization called the Seabees. That's what we're about, Gary, and that's how people can reach us.
And this might sound like a silly question, comment, but spell Seabee for the folks.
Yes, Seabee, it's a capital S-E-A-B-E-E. There's only one capital letter. People tend to put that B in caps, but it's not. It's Seabee.
That's a name that goes back to World War II, almost 67 years ago.
It does. It comes from the letters CB, which were the original letters of Construction Battalion. And then we had a CB himself who came up with the idea, not only the logo, but the name CB was very natural. Is that this is a busy, busy organization, and secondly, we come from the sea, along with the Marine Corps.
I told you we exchanged emails about Joe Rodriguez, a very dear friend who's passed away here in Ann Arbor. Joe's flag squad raised the flag, the second flag on Suribachi. He was always quick to point it out. There were Marines up there ahead of him. And it was the very famous one that was the photograph taken by Joe Rosenthal. And it was Joe Rodriguez that found the pipe they tied the flag to. He told me about standing on the side of Mount Suribachi, and the whole purpose for taking Iwo Jima was to get that airstrip so crippled B-29s would have a place to land rather than be lost at sea as they were coming back from bombing raids in over Japan. And he told of seeing the very first B-29 come in. It was crippled, obviously. The Seabees were working on the runway. They saw it coming, got off the runway. The B-29 belly landed, came to a sliding halt at the far end of the runway. And what was significant, what really amazed Joe, when they bailed out of the plane, they jumped out, when it bailed out on the ground, they jumped out of the plane. It was under fire from the Japanese because the Japanese still held that end of the runway and the Marines were fighting them to take it. But he said as soon as that plane went by, the Seabees were back on the runway and lengthening and repairing it. And he could not believe that these guys would be out there exposed with no weapons, doing their job, while the Marines were fighting the Japanese at the end of the runway.
Yeah, and one of the CBs I didn't tell you about, John Williams, his CC officer, he landed in the fifth wave on Iwo Jima. He says he couldn't believe that day. He'll never forget that day, and he's the head of Williams, or retired as the head of the Williams Brothers Corporation in Tulsa. Another, you know, man, that tremendous man that is very, very proud of his World War II service with the Seabees.
And Seabees were not just in the Pacific; they were at Normandy on D-Day.
They absolutely were. They were at that time. Seabees were involved with much of the underwater demolition, clearing tank traps and other underwater devices, so they could get into those beaches. So no, they were. They aren't as hailed as they were in the Pacific, but they sure were in the invasion of Europe.
And over in the Middle East, as you mentioned, they're doing unbelievable jobs. I read an after-action report after the invasion about by a general describing what happened, what was right, what was wrong. And one of the sentences that he had in there was, "Thank God for the Seabees." He didn't expand. He just said, "Thank God for the Seabees."
Well, the story goes on. Because of the work they've done in the Middle East, the Seabees were added another battalion. We now have 9 battalions. MCB-11 was recommissioned a couple of years ago, primarily because of the need for Seabees and what they've shown they can do in building forward bases, and for that matter, advancing with the Marine Corps. For the first time, we had a Civil Engineer Corps Admiral in charge of the Joint Engineer Force that went from the border of Kuwait all the way to Baghdad in this last war. So the Seabees continue to build that great reputation.
We've got 2 minutes left. Amazingly, it's gone that fast. This is kind of like I call free fire zone. Tell us whatever you want to tell us about anything regarding the Seabees.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm 73 years old, have seen and done a lot over the years. But those 2 years with you guys in Vietnam are still the highlights of my life because I can still see you, I can feel it. And I also felt that I was doing something so worthwhile that it'll never leave me, Gary. And so when you contacted me and we tried to find our friend Jeff Nabel, and we did find Jeff, those memories I think they're burned in my mind and they spill over to this museum project because I still have my hands around Seabees, with Seabees, telling their story, which has been so great over the years, and it has been an honor to be a part of that story.
And for me, too. And Jeff Nabel was my old company commander, Delta Company commander, and I have talked about him for years. I said he was one of the best leaders and the coolest guys I ever met in my life.
He certainly was. He was. He and I went on R&R together twice.
I wasn't going to bring that up, what he said about your R&R.
He was at work. He's a great guy.
There was those were different times, and there was that's just something that I look back on, and sometimes I can't believe what we've accomplished during that time. Admiral Montoya, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio and telling us the CB story and about the CB Museum coming up. We want to thank our sponsors, Marine Scholarship Fund, Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, LLC, that's me, Schrader Yacht Sales, Detroit Legal News Publishing, Legal Help for Veterans, Singleton Family Dentistry, Len Pitlack, CPA. Join us next week for Bob Feller. In the meantime, you are dismissed.
Opinions or views expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail, and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.